Hello, and welcome to another Veterinary Team Training Podcast. My name is Amy Newford. I'm both the host and owner of Vet Team Training. Please check out all my other blogs, vlogs, and podcasts at vetteamtraining.com. And if you're not aware, my online continuing education website doesn't just include on-demand content. It now also includes live, interactive, smaller sessions where you get to come off mute and talk to the instructor. So with over 80 hours of race-approved credit and only $95 for the entire year, it is literally the best bang for your buck in terms of online continuing education because it's not just pre-recorded webinars, you get to interact with actual instructors. I decided to expand on my vlog, which was wildly popular, more so than I thought it was going to be, and it actually resonated with a lot of people. The vlog was titled, "You Have a Title, But You're Not Allowed to Do the Job." And I decided to name this podcast the exact same thing, because I think the title really resonated with a lot of people. And I started to dive into that into a little bit more detail. What data is out there? What sort of science is out there? How can we help people who have a title, but you're not allowed to do the job? So I wanted to use this podcast to do a deeper dive into a plague that runs through veterinary medicine. And if you're not familiar with this plague, it looks a little bit something like this. Now, largely, veterinarians are allowed to do the job of being a doctor. But once we get outside of the role of being a veterinarian, well, there's a lot of gray areas. So we have a practice manager. They generally, most of the time, get to do the role of a practice manager. Then we have a veterinary technician or a veterinary assistant. Surely they get to perform to the highest ability that they can possibly perform within state laws? No. In fact, I very rarely see veterinary technicians and veterinary assistants being used to what they are legally allowed to do in the state. For example, in a lot of states, veterinary technicians are allowed to suture up patients. How many veterinary technicians are you utilizing to go ahead and place sutures in a patient? They're also allowed to do nerve blocks. They're also allowed to do thoraco and abdominocentesis. How many veterinary technicians who are credentialed are you utilizing to that capacity? Oh, you're not? Well, then they have a title, but they're not allowed to do the job that they're actually trained to do. Isn't that frustrating? Could you imagine if you were a doctor and you came out of med school and you enter and they go, "Oh, I'm sorry. I know you are a veterinarian, but here we don't trust you to spay and neuter. So you're going to have to prove yourself first. And then, you know, maybe after 6 months to a year, you can go ahead and like shadow someone. I know they trained you to do this in school, but we don't trust you." Okay. Anyway, I know I digress. What about our front desk? Surely they can do the job, right? Well, they can, but it's a very narrow scope. And actually, there's so much more. Our front desk veterinary medical receptionist should be doing that. Unfortunately, we just treat them as glorified people who answer the telephone, and we wonder why they leave the career so quickly. But it goes beyond those titles, because you'd think like, okay, within a hospital, we can see Amy where there might be some gray area. We've got to utilize our veterinary technicians. We have to utilize our veterinary assistants. We have to create career paths for our client service representatives. But it goes beyond that. Even in larger hospitals where we get bigger roles like technician trainer or regional directors or medical directors, we still do not allow these people to perform their job to their fullest capacity. And it's very frustrating. So let's dive into kind of what that looks like, because we've talked about kind of the defining what that means, but let's talk about why this occurs. And if you're in a role that you have a title, but you're not allowed to do the job, what can you really do about it? So first and foremost, why does this even occur? You have someone who's super talented, somebody that you believe in, and you go ahead and give them a title, maybe, hopefully, you give them a job description, but the reality is that's like a whole nother conversation. You need to give job descriptions to people, especially if you change their title. And we're going to dive into what that looks like. And if you don't have a job description, hey, this podcast is going to help you out, because job descriptions actually hold both you and your employer accountable. It's not just for the employer to say, "Hey, look, these are the things I expect you to do." It's actually to make sure that you're allowed to do the things that are in the job description. So everybody's on the same page. And when you're not being able to perform to your highest ability, you can simply say, "Yeah, but in my job description, it says that I'm going to run the meetings and you're not allowing me to run the meetings." So really, truly, job descriptions actually go both ways. It is an agreement between both the employer and the employee to say, "Hey, we've agreed upon this job description and we're going to go and hold each other accountable." So there are three main reasons why individuals get put into job titles and they're not allowed to perform the job. The first one is they are not trusted to do the job that they were put in. And that occurs more commonly with veterinary technicians and assistants. Again, I can't stress enough, technician utilization is really important to retention. There's a direct correlation. And there's nothing more frustrating than a veterinary technician who's graduated from an AVMA accredited college. Now, let me just pause here. It's the same group who actually accredits veterinarians. We have AVMA accredited veterinarian colleges, and we have AVMA accredited veterinary technician colleges. So the same governing board who accredits both organizations accredits both organizations. But yeah, one is allowed to graduate and become a doctor, and the other one is allowed to graduate and restrain animals and work in a kennel. I don't know where to begin with this. Again, totally separate podcast, but we have to recognize that I'm tired of saying things like, well, I don't know what level they're at. Listen, there's a lot of really terrible green veterinarians out there who should not be doing spays and neuters. They should be not extracting teeth. They barely know how to diagnose, and yet someone awarded them a DVM veterinary license. And that's terrifying to me because I've worked with some of these people. So when you say insulting things like, well, I don't know what the level that they're at, I don't know what level your veterinarians are at, and I have to work with them as a technician. So anyway, side note, let's get back to the podcast because I get a little fiery about that topic. So not trusting someone is one of the big reasons. And again, it comes down to someone in my past, unfortunately, failed me, and I don't trust someone. The other reason why we don't trust is because we're a micromanager. Yeah, that's some of you listening to this. Now, micromanaging isn't just for managers. I feel like that should be printed all over a t-shirt. Micromanaging occurs between teammates, between colleagues. It's that, you know, more green technician who's being hovered over by the more senior technician who's telling them that they're doing it wrong, they're not doing it the right way, or it's a veterinary assistant who wants to learn new skills, and then unfortunately, you have somebody saying, yeah, but I don't trust you, so I'm not going to allow you to do whatever skill you want to do, and I'm not going to grow you or educate you in any sort of way. Micromanaging occurs at all sectors. It basically comes down to, again, not trusting. I don't believe that you can do it to the ability that I want you to do it, so therefore it's just easier if I do it myself. Mm-hmm. If you ever have said it's easier for me to do it myself, well, then you're probably falling a little bit into the micromanaging category, because the reality is every job, everything about every job can be trained for someone else to do it. It might take a little bit more time. It might not be easy, but everybody can be trained to do a job, and that's really important. So micromanaging, not trusting, now we unfortunately don't allow someone to just perform the skills that they were made to do, right? That's super uncool. So that's number one reason why people are in job titles but not allowed to do the job. So what's the second reason that we're dealing with? The second reason is I didn't really know what the job was and I don't have a job description. And this unfortunately goes back to creative job titles. So there's a lot of creative job titles out there. I think a lot of them are really well-meaning. For example, training technician is one I see that pops up a lot. There's some creativity in the sense of like, our team needs training. This person's really good at it. They're going to be our training technician. Okay, great. But what does that really mean and what does that dive into? And the reality is that a large percentage of these roles fail because we don't allow them time off the floor. Well, training requires education. Education requires materials. Materials require time to put them together in order to identify them and come up with a plan on how we're going to train. You can't simply say, I'm just going to train the entire staff on, you know, how to place an IV catheter if they don't know how to place an IV catheter. How do you do that? What does that look like? Do you have videos? Do you have training modules? Are you going to be using foam legs, cadavers? What does it look like? And all of that takes time for the person who's creating the training to put together. Unfortunately, we don't recognize that when we decide to put somebody in a more creative role, and again, training technicians are absolutely needed, but then we have regional directors, we've got directors of directors, we've got vice presidents, we've got medical directors. We're putting people in these higher roles because we see they have a lot of really great ideas. And here, I'm going to pause. If you say you're an ideas person, but you have never actually created plans and moved forward with them, then you probably don't deserve one of these more creative roles. These creative roles for people who not only have great ideas, but actually know how to make them come to fruition. Because right now, as a completely different aside, I see people who have great ideas and they're failing at something called project planning. Project planning is key to being successful in any larger creative role. You can have all the ideas you want. That's awesome. But if you don't know how to execute your plan, well, then why are you in that large role? Because it's not just about thinking about things. It's about coming up with the resources, the tools, the time, and how to actually make it happen. Now, there's plenty of ideas people who recognize that they struggle with actual project planning. And then they're going to align themselves with really great skilled people to get stuff done. But the reality is most of the time in this industry, ideas people don't seem to do very well. They need to actually be able to create a project and make it come to fruition all by themselves. Otherwise, honestly, it's really a struggle. I know I keep digressing and going off on all these side tangents, but there's a lot of side tangents that kind of make up you have a title, but you're not allowed to do the job. So anyway, going back to this. So these creative titles are fantastic because we're going to empower someone with a lot of skill and knowledge to do a particular thing that we think needs to occur because there's a gap either in our hospital, there's a gap we're trying to fill in the company, there's a gap in the corporation, whatever it is, we're trying to fill the gap with this particular person's skills and knowledge. But we don't really know what the job is. That's really frustrating. If you've ever been like me, I've created a couple roles for myself, some of which I have found hugely success with, and other I have completely not found successful because unfortunately, the job description wasn't laid out appropriately. So it certainly is possible that the second reason, again, is that we don't even know what the job is supposed to be. And it is very hard, if you've ever been put in one of these roles, to sometimes be successful because your idea of what this job is and the idea that actually the other person has might be two totally different things. All right, so that leads us straight into reason number three, why you might have a title, but you're not allowed to do the job. Right now, we've come up with, again, lack of trust, micromanaging, not utilization. The second one, and have no idea what the job's supposed to be. I put you in this, no clue, don't have a job description. We're going to figure it out as we go along. You're probably not going to be successful if we don't actually have nailed down a real job description. So the third thing leads right into it, and it's the fact that you might not have the tools and resources to be successful. And this can be really frustrating because a lot of these larger roles, especially from a technician trainer, a client service manager, from a medical director standpoint, from a vice president of operations, regional directors, and I see regional directors, and it's so great that I'm now seeing not only regional directors in operations, but medical and nursing. This is so fantastic. And so those three buckets, if you haven't listened to my spiel on the three buckets, again, we have three buckets in our hospitals: operation, medical, and nursing. And they all have to line up. Otherwise, your hospital or your organization fails miserably. When you have all the top people in your company, let's just say you own 15, 20 hospitals, and 90% of them are operations and one is medical and zero of them are actually nursing, bucket, you're gonna fail. That's just not how that works. So we really do need to focus on making sure that we have operations, medical, and nursing from a huge corporate level all the way down from a local level of a single doctor-owned hospital working together to make sure everything's successful. So if you have a title and you're not allowed to do the job, it could be because you don't have the tools and resources. All right, let's go back to that technician trainer. I see this an awful lot. Tools and resources they need to be successful. One, they need a budget. Did you allot them a budget? Did you even consider a budget? Two, they're going to need time off the floor. Yes, you cannot work your technician trainer as 40 hours a week and then expect them on their side hustle for $0 to just pull out training out their butt. It's just not gonna happen. Nobody's getting trained. Number three, they are probably going to need things like items that they need to bring and build models with. They might need a program. They might need access to videos or computer modules or things like that. Whatever it is, those things have to go into the resource bucket of that technician trainer. And then here are the things that I guess we call them sort of the softer resources, but they're really hard to obtain sometimes, people. So from a technician training standpoint, one of the things that they absolutely need is the support of the other leaders. They need to have that support of the other leaders. And that is a resource to some level, because if they don't have it, the other leaders don't find value in what they're trying to do for the team, then they're going to fail and they don't get to do the job that they have a title for. Very frustrating. Okay, so let's look at a different position. Let's look at a medical director. And you say, Amy, medical directors are always allowed to do what they're supposed to do. Also no. So generally speaking, a medical director also serves in some capacity in a leadership role, right? So their job is to make sure that the doctors on their team, whether it be one or two or five or 10 or 20, have the tools and resources that they need to have. But in order to do that, they have to be able to have time off the floor. And I know our veterinarians are quote unquote salaried, meaning that no matter how much they work, we just pay them the same low, low price. And that's probably not cool. So we need to make sure that we take them off the schedule, allow them some office time, allow them to do schedule management, allow them to do host meetings, allow them to have the tools and resources to make their team successful. And what could be some of these tools and resources? Well, they might also need a budget. I mean, veterinarians are largely given a large continuing education bucket. Okay, I'm going to pause. I'm going down a weird side tangent again. And at some point, I'm going to post a meme because I just want to scream to the top of my lungs about this. So my online continuing education platform is literally the cheapest online CE platform for a yearly subscription rate of $95. It hurts my soul, not because I'm losing business, but because the emails that come through that tell me they can no longer afford to learn from my website because their employer will not pay, and they make $15 an hour, $17 an hour, and $95 is just too much because that is 8 to 10 hours, sometimes 15 hours they have to work in order to pay for my online CE platform. Super uncool. It's $95 a year and I offer group rates. It's appalling that we are not giving better continuing education benefits to our veterinary technicians and assistants and client service representatives. I don't even know where to begin with the atrocity. Okay, now let's get back to the podcast. I am going to go off on a tangent on it because it's driving me nuts. And again, yes, I lose business, but that's not the point. My heart is literally broken. It is literally broken that these people in an email express they want to stay part of the website, but that they are forced to choose between my website and putting gas in the car. I'm going to say it's disgusting. It's disgusting that we can't afford good continuing education benefits for employees that are literally saving animal lives every single day. Okay, back to the podcast now. I think I'm done. We'll find out. Anyway, so the reality is medical directors need those tools and resources too, but they also need the support. And there's that soft resource again. We're going to need that support of the practice manager, hospital administrator, regional people. We need those supports so that when our medical directors say, hey, my team is struggling with X, Y, and Z, that's when we can go ahead and say, hey, what do you need? We're here for you. Because it's really frustrating when we expect our medical directors to connect with everybody on the team to help grow the veterinarian staff, but they're not ever allowed to meet with them or given tools and resources on how to be a leader. So we have to make sure that we have tools and resources for those positions as well. And then don't even get me started on even the larger positions. Having been in national positions and regional positions, oh man, the atrocities of the lack of tools and resources is atrocious. Now, one of the roles that I was in was a national role, and I very quickly, you know, I watched a hospital group go from 30-something hospitals to about almost 80-something hospitals when I started to realize I can't be the only veterinary technician on a national level for this company. It's just not working out well for me. I feel like I'm spinning wheels. And ultimately asked for a redesign of the role. And long story short, after almost a year, finally, they did realize that regionals were necessary. Regional support going and filtering up to a national level where, you know, we would have a national person helping to manage those regional people was really key to being successful in everything that we wanted to accomplish. But it took a long time to get there, and it is very frustrating when it seems so very obvious to the person who's in the job with the title, but everybody else is refusing to listen. You know, another job that I had, it was so frustrating because it seemed so obvious that technician managers should live in almost every single hospital. I mean, after all, after you get two or three doctors in, you get a medical director. I mean, somebody gets the title of a medical director. That's amazing. Meanwhile, technicians are still being managed by the practice owner who may or may not have ever worked in veterinary medicine and has no idea what the veterinary technician role is or really what the scope is. I mean, going back to the beginning of this podcast, there's some practice managers listening go, wait, is it true that my veterinary technicians are legally allowed to suture in my state? I have no idea. Wait, are my veterinary technicians really allowed to place like arterial lines and do thoracocentesis? What about using the ultrasound for AFAST and TFAST? Is that something they're allowed to do? So that tells me if you don't know, you probably aren't the best person to manage them. Now in human nursing, this sort of weird atrocity doesn't occur because human nurses, I think they just realize, registered nurses, they realize, hey, we want to be managed by people who do our job. That seems to make sense, right? Oh, like a light bulb moment. So in veterinary medicine, we struggle when we put people in roles, but we don't really fully understand what they're supposed to be doing. Anyway, I digress. So when we have a technician manager who's now in this manager position, how are we supposed to help support that particular role? Well, that comes down to what tools and resources do we need for them to be successful? And we cannot expect anyone in a leadership role to be successful if they don't actually have the time to come up with plans and build out those plans through projects and then implement them within their team. So they're going to need some time off the floor. Okay. So what are you going to do if you happen to be in a job, but you're not allowed to actually do what your title is, because that can be very frustrating. Okay, we've identified the three reasons why it mostly occurs in veterinary medicine. And listen, I put that out there because of my own personal thoughts and stories on roles that I've had and watching others. And I've had some recent conversations with people that have just been so frustrating listening to their pain and you know, mental frustration about roles they thought were going to be great for them and only to be told, no, you can't do it. Or I'm sorry, you're probably never going to be successful here, right? Super frustrating. So I'm a fan of always giving tools and resources to you to make sure that you can take this podcast and do something with it. So let's dive into, okay, you are the one who have a title, but you're not allowed to do the job. All right, what can you do? Well, it's very interesting because when you start down into the Google, the internet searching of trying to identify data or statistics or information to provide people on this topic, it turns out this doesn't really exist. And maybe this is a vet med thing. I can't believe that to be true. I'm sure there are other business sectors where people have been put in roles with job titles and then unfortunately not allowed to actually be successful because they weren't given the autonomy to do so. So that said, I did find a couple articles. I found some on Indeed, on LinkedIn, and on Harvard Business Review. And here's their recommendations for what you should do if you're struggling in your job. First and foremost, identify your top responsibilities and your accomplishments. So before you even go to your boss, and you probably have, at some point you've gone and expressed your concerns, why you feel like you're not being as productive as you could, why you feel like you're failing in your role, what kind of tools and resources you need to be successful, and you feel like you're just getting brushed off. You have said, hey, you know, I did graduate with a degree in veterinary technology. In fact, I actually have a bachelor's of science and I can place that IV catheter, and they're still not listening to you. I want you to identify what are your top responsibilities and accomplishments that you have done in this particular hospital. Please identify any major accomplishments, the big wins, the things that you know. Now, if you are a vet tech, you're relatively new and you're not getting to utilize your skill, that big win might be you talked a client off the ledge, right? Or you helped with a very difficult case that was a trauma case and you kept your cool. Whatever it is, I want you to identify what that looks like. And then the second thing is you're going to go ahead and take those and you're going to put that on a, what's called a functional resume. I like the term of that. I didn't know that definition until I started reading up on this a little bit more. Functional resume. So this is a resume that can be served to show people what you are functioning as, what you are currently doing. So all the skills that you're currently doing, all of the professional experience that you have, the current roles and responsibilities that you're doing in that hospital, that's your functional resume. Here right now, this is what I'm doing. And that's really important to go ahead and explain that basically to an employer. To me, this is like almost like a job description, but you can also show in some professional experience of why you should be allowed to do certain things, especially going back to client service managers, technician managers. A lot of times you want to start going ahead and, you know, doing performance-based conversations with your team. After all, especially if you're in a manager role, you really should be. And you were put in this role to coach and develop out your team. But anytime there's a conflict or a mediation, your practice manager takes two employees behind closed doors or takes that particular employee behind closed doors, says, I'll talk to them, and closes the door, and you're not allowed in there. If you have professional experience where you took an online course in communication or you've challenged yourself in some sort of capacity and you're trying to grow your leadership skills, that needs to be on this functional resume so that you're able to bring that to the table when you have a conversation with your boss. So now you need to advocate for yourself. And this is where it gets very scary, because our immediate thought, at least for me anyway, the minute I go to advocate for myself is the minute that they're just gonna go ahead and haul off and fire me. And listen, if you are providing value and a great service to that hospital, that shouldn't happen. I want you to lead with kindness and empathy, and I want you to put everything back on yourself. So there's two ways to deliver information to your employer. One is, you know, you put me in this job, you won't even allow me to do it. I've asked for X, Y, and Z. This is why I'm failing. I don't have time to train anyone on the team. My work-life balance is horrible and you suck. Okay, you're probably not gonna really be able to get your point across, because they are going to feel like you're just attacking them, because you are. So please do not take that approach. Instead, what I would rather you do is put everything back on yourself, on how you see your role and how you want to excel. So this is a little bit manipulative, but it's actually a really important communication strategy. So when we sit down and we start talking about, you know, our hopes and dreams, it is literally like our hopes and dreams for our employers. So you sit down and say, hey, I'm really nervous about having this conversation because there are certain things that I feel like I need in order to be successful. But I also think we need to have a conversation about really what my job is. Ultimately, I really want to be the best version of myself for this team because it means so much to me. And I also want to make sure that I'm doing my best for you because you put me in this role and I'm so honored, and I just want to make sure that I don't fail you. Wow, completely different, right? Now you've hooked them in, okay? So you basically cast the line, you hooked them in. They're like, well, I also want that for you because I want you to be successful because you seem like you really care about this job. Now we've got their attention and now we've got buy-in. If we go with option A, you're gonna lose them immediately. If you go with option B, where you put things back on yourself, your concern about you and the job, your desire to do good, your desire to make sure that they think you're doing a good job, you're going to get their attention. So obviously, one of the things we can do that's super easy is simply just ask your employer to change the job title. If you're doing things that are above and beyond your current job description and your job title, just asking them to change the job. But again, going back to that functional resume where you can refer to it and say, you know, when I was hired, I was, working on the floor as a veterinary technician, but now I'm doing inventory, I'm doing scheduling, I'm doing a lot of client callbacks for veterinarians. I've got a lot on my plate and I was wondering what you think my job title could be, because it's not veterinary technician, it's something else, right? Decide also whether or not you want to take on all the things that you're currently taking on. For example, if you were supposed to have a narrow scope in your job, but now it's way too big, or it's way too small, do you really want to do that, right? That's for you to decide, not for you to ask your employer. So make sure you come to the table deciding if you really want to stay in this job. That's important. And lastly, you need to advocate for yourself. What do you need? And by building out a functional resume, you can go ahead, take a look and say to yourself, I would be more successful in training if I had X, Y, and Z. I want you to come to the table with that. And so again, going back to that, leading with compassion, leading with kindness, I would really love to be successful as a veterinary technician, trainer, but I'm on the floor for 40 hours a week. I've taken the time to go ahead and build out how long it takes me to do certain, you know, training or certain, you know, development programs. And as you can see, it takes me about, you know, an extra 8 hours a week to develop out a program. And then that program needs to be implemented. The last time I taught people how to place IV catheters, it roughly was about 6 hours or so extra time. So therefore, I'm asking, if we break down all this extra time I'm doing in a month, can I please get roughly 5 to 10 hours off the floor, whatever it is? You have to start quantifying how much time that you need, because sometimes your boss, your manager, doesn't have an idea of what you need unless you very clearly bring it out. And let me, the other thing that we fail at when we advocate for ourselves is we're not specific enough. When you say, I need help, what does that mean? You know, what kind of help do you need? Do you need someone who's skilled, not skilled? Do you need physical items? Do you need people? What does that look like? Or when you say, I'm failing miserably because I don't have any time off the floor. Well, what is that? What does that mean? How can you be more successful? So sometimes you don't know what you don't know, but a lot of you do know what you actually need. Like, I knew I needed regional help. I wasn't going to continue to be successful on a national role unless I had support system underneath me to help drive some of these larger initiatives. Makes sense, right? But getting there took a very long time. So asking for and advocating for yourself is really important. Some of you might need to put numbers around things, especially when you're building out how much it's going to cost. For example, regional people cost money. How much money did we want to pay each one of these people? And how many regions did we have? And what does that look like? And that goes into building out a large-scale project initiative for change so that my life could be significantly better. So hopefully when you're looking at your own job, you can figure out what do I really need, and how can I be successful in a job that I don't feel like I'm successful in because I'm lacking that support system. It can be really frustrating. And the end result is when you have an employee who feels like they're spinning their wheels, or they're in a job that they're not allowed to go ahead and do 100%, that they don't have the autonomy to do, that employee at some point is going to leave. Now, hopefully that employee comes to you and expresses some frustration. If an employee comes to you, especially a good employee, let's remember that some of these more creative titles, that you put people in there because you saw a gap. And maybe you didn't know quite how that person was going to solve a problem or perform well or do something a certain way, but you believed in them. They're still that same person. They still have a lot of really great ideas, and hopefully they can also execute those ideas. If they're coming to you and saying, I am failing and I need your help and here's what I need, hey, listen, employers, you got to listen to them. That's really important. You can't shut them down and just say, oh, well, we don't have room in the budget, or you need to figure it out. You still have to be on the floor 40 hours a week. I don't know how we're going to take you off. We're so short staffed. None of that language is going to make that person feel any better. And what's going to end up happening is they're going to try to go ahead and be successful in both roles, and they will fail in both roles, and they will leave. They will leave and they will find a hospital that's going to give them the tools and resources they need to be successful, because guess what they learned? They learned what they needed. And I've taken those tools and resources and I've said, hey, I'm not successful with this job, but I now know what I need in this job in order to be successful. And I've pitched the same role to another hospital and gotten the role. So be fully aware that when you fail your employee, they will go ahead and just become stronger and better for it. And they're going to build that role out in another hospital and be super and wildly successful because of it. There's a lot of things to unpack here, right? Ultimately, we have, again, that distrust factor, that micromanaging, the fact that we don't want to allow people the full autonomy to do the job because, well, it's just easier if I do it. Or, you know, I don't really know their skill level. Super uncool. That's on you. You need to work on your trust issues. I get it. You've been burned. And I hear veterinarians saying, well, Amy, it's my license. I understand that, but you can't do everything, and you can't be a successful veterinarian unless you have a great team of veterinary technicians and assistants and veterinary nurses surrounding you. I promise you, you might think you're going to be successful, but you'll be more successful if you support the team and allow them the full autonomy to practice all the skills and knowledge that they come into the hospital with. The other thing, do you even have a well thought out job description? Are you even aware of what you're supposed to be doing? Employer, employee need to agree upon it and tweak it as it goes along. Especially for a lot of these creative titles, this is really important that the employee and the manager work closely together to really nail down what is this job and how can we make it successful. And if you feel like you're failing, that's where step three comes into play. You gotta advocate for yourself. You have to. And if you feel like you're just not doing a good job, that's never a good feeling. No one says, you know what? I'd like to make sure that I do a terrible job and that I feel bad about myself every single day. Nobody wants that feeling. So if the employee is constantly coming to you saying, I feel like a failure, I feel like a failure, I feel like a failure, well then managers, you need to pay attention, and people who are in these positions and you feel like you're spinning your wheels and you're not successful and you have this title but you can't be successful, at some point, take everything that you learned and go find a hospital that's going to support you. Thank you for everything that you do. If you're in one of these titles, I'm sorry, I've been there. A lot of us have, and I had no idea how much this actual vlog resonated with everybody until I put it out there. I had people privately messaging me. I had a lot of messages both on Facebook and on LinkedIn. So I appreciate your thoughts because that drove me to diving into this a little bit more detail. This is a plague that happens in veterinary medicine. It's a plague. First, recognition is key, right? We have to recognize that we're failing a lot of our employees because we're simply not allowing them and trusting to them to do the jobs that we gave them the title for. And lastly, for all of you who are in this position, thank you. It's hard, man. It's hard being in your position, but I want you to advocate for yourself. All right, everybody, thank you for everything that you do. And as I always like to sign off, thank you for being a unicorn. Please check out all my other blogs, vlogs, and podcasts at vetteamtraining.com.